Shift FM. Zwischen 0 und 1. Gespräche über Kunst und Digitalität.
Hallo und willkommen zu Shift FM. Wir sind Emma und Emil.
Heute interviewen wir Daniel Ernst zu Kunst in der Krise und seinem Projekt The Showbox Diorama Nummer 4, die Fernwehoper.
Viel Spaß beim Zuhören.
Well, then, the first question. Where were you born and why?
I was born in Alkmaar, which is in the north of Holland. It's a small town known for its cheese. And why I was born, it was probably in the fall of a cheap bottle of wine and a late evening. That's all the details I'm going to give.
Okay.
Nice. Do you have siblings?
Yes, I have one older brother.
Okay. Do you own a pet?
Yes. Well, I don't own him as much he is because there's a difference. Slavery has been abolished for quite some time. So he's an elderly cat, 17 years.
Oh, that's old.
Tivo. Oh, yeah, he's very old. We got him when he was 15.
Okay.
Because we, we wanted to have a cat, but there were so many old cats that could still be loved, so we decided to take the elderly ones. Because I still got a couple of good years in them, and they love to sleep, drool, and that's about it. Which is kind of the same rhythm I'm on, so it's nice.
That's to have a thought, yes.
Yeah.
As a child, did you have a favorite stuffed animal, and what was its name?
Ooh, that's a deep cut. Let's see. I got a couple of them. One of my the one I loved most was also the one that was most scary. It was a weird bluish monster with hair and chains on his legs. It was this weird toy line from the 80s, which didn't last very long, but we got one of the more scary ones. It was like a blue baboon type creature. I could swear he moved when it was dark. So I kind of disliked being alone with him in the room, but I also liked that whole, excitement of, having him perhaps attack me when I was not looking. And I probably also watched too many horror movies when I was way too young, such as Child's Play. So that was not a good combination, but it was also a very good combination. So, but I didn't name him even. He was just there.
Okay.
Yeah, it sounds like the start of a creepy pasta or something.
Yes. Yeah, it could be. So, what was your favorite game as a child?
So, I played a lot of Duke Nukem, but mostly the game engine, so you could create your own levels and stuff like that. But the game I got really, really into was Tetris Attack, because we played it with the whole family, and there was a real rivalry going on at home. Because my mom was very fanatic Tetris player, so we would play until the late hours, and it was always my mom was the best at Tetris Attack, so we had to beat her. It was like the end boss.
Oh, okay.
We played it so much that when we closed our eyes when we went to sleep, we would see the blocks still falling. Those were the days.
Nice. In your opinion, what's the greatest invention?
That's a good one. Let's go for virtual reality headset. Yeah,
right.
Why not?
Yeah.
Yeah. Or else I would be out of a job. So that's I probably should name the virtual reality headset as the best invention. Yeah.
Perfect. What's your New Year's resolution that you never keep?
Then I will get a New Year's resolution. I never do. I was like, perhaps I should do this or do that. And now I'm like, that's probably not going to happen. So I don't promise anything. Perhaps less eating, but actually I keep to that promise because it's impossible to eat more in normal days than during the vacation and holiday season, because that's you eat so much, which I don't actually dislike that much. It's just that afterwards you have to stop. Or else you die.
How resentful are you?
Well, it depends. Like, I can be quite resentful about specific things. Like, one of which is if you touch my food, it's a thing I can deal with. Or if you steal food. Like, there are some people who have stolen, like, for example, there was this one case where I was eating soup, and there was sausages in my soup, and somebody took out the sausages out of my soup. Like, what type of person does that? And I haven't spoken to that person ever again since then. Sometimes, you know, I see him walking in the streets, and my girlfriend says hi, and I just ignore him. He doesn't exist in my world anymore. Some other people made the same mistake, to steal my food. And then they were didn't understand why I was so angry and didn't talk to them. And then my friends explained it to them, like, what did you do? And then he was like, well, I stole his food. And then I'm like, oh, that was a wrong move. Yeah. But I'm also part Serbian, so perhaps that's also part of my inherent nature to hold a grudge. I don't know.
All right. Are you an optimist or a pessimist?
I'm a realist, so that would be somewhere in between.
Okay.
What are you being kept from doing?
How can I move my mouth full? And that's one thing I like. I shouldn't do that around the house. that's the one thing my girlfriend was sensible about. Let's see. Well, I don't know. I mean, once you reach a certain age, there's nothing really holding you back except taxes and, you know, the law. That's it. I mean, I can go to that, what hour I please, I can eat whatever I want. Yeah, it's quite a good deal, actually. Like, it's some first world privilege right here.
And what are you too old for?
Well, I can't, well, the playgrounds, those are fun, but I can't, you know, play on them anymore. That would be awkward and weird. But, you know, it's too small for me, too many kids. So it's like one day I'm going to make a playground for grown-ups. Only grown-ups are allowed. I think there are a lot of people who would like that.
It's a really good idea.
I would like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe I can do a request for some financiers or something, investors.
Yeah, hit us up if you found someone.
Well, ideal.
Perfect. What time are you getting up in the morning, or the day?
Well, I'm having my vacation this week, so it's quite late. So now it's like 9:30 or something. I go to bed at 3 or 2 because I'm playing a new video game, which I finally have time for. It's normally like it was quite we just started work on a new project, so that always takes up a lot of time. So I haven't had a lot of time to catch up on my video game library, which I do now this week. So I'm catching up, like, with a vengeance. Yeah. So it's like, let's say, like, normally I would wake up between 7 and 8. During vacation times, it should be usually 9:30. Or I just stay in bed. Because I normally wake up and just stay in bed, read, or play some more video games on my Switch. Which it kind of sounds like I'm only playing video games all day long, which is not true. Only during the holidays, vacation.
All right. Now we have your favorite question. What do you think about pineapple on pizza?
Yes, disgusting. That's disgrace. I talk about resentful. That's I don't know. You know, I in Holland we have something that's called a pizza shawarma. Yeah. So basically, they put it on a pizza. And this was one incident where I wanted to have a proper pizza from an Italian person, which was difficult to find. And then we looked around for hours and hours until we found a proper pizza place. And then we sat down and I ordered a pizza shawarma. Which to this day people hate me for. But the pineapple on my pizza, I don't know, I never liked it. I don't think you should ever say this to an Italian person ever. It's the same as drinking cappuccino before 12, I mean, that's also something you shouldn't do. So if you want to upset a proprietarian, you have to order a pineapple pizza and a cappuccino before 12. You'll probably be murdered. It's worth it.
All right, now it's getting existential. What are you afraid of?
I have a fear of public speaking. That's like the worst thing ever. But I do it anyway. I don't think I fear anything worse than that. That's like looking into the pit of despair, staring back at me. I don't know. That's probably the thing I fear most. Yeah.
Okay. What do you love to do, although you know it's bad for you?
I do like to snack. That's definitely not a good thing. Especially during these lockdown periods. It was like, my God, I gained weight. 3 kilos. So probably snacking. I shouldn't do a lot of snacking, but I do. I just blame it on enjoying life, I guess. But I doubt like eating a bunch of chocolate is enjoying life. I don't know. It was during the lockdown and drinking wine for some reason. I don't know. Lockdown was a lot of fun. I can tell you that.
What is the one thing you do if nobody's watching?
What's the age the people are listening to? I mean, there are some stuff I'm not going to mention on radio, that's for sure. But other than that, it's like, I don't know, not much that I do if there are people around. I bet those people wouldn't, you know, want to hear me sing or anything, so that's for sure. But other than that, I'm mostly, you know, I'm usually very, how do you say it, when I'm alone, I'm usually in my head anyway, so it's not necessarily an external thing I'm doing. I'm thinking most of the time, that's about it. It's actually quite boring.
What's something that you can't live without?
Well, I think drawing, that's definitely something I have to do.
What is your best recipe or tip against boredom?
Play video games, read a book, learn a second language, or eat. That's also a good thing. Just eat chocolate, drink wine. That will get you through the day.
Okay, so are you more like the saving kind of person or the spending kind of person?
Saving, definitely, yeah. Yeah, but I'm Dutch, so that's a natural thing for us.
What do you believe in?
Well, the power of oneself. I think you're responsible for your own actions.
All right. Do you sleep with the window open or closed?
Now I sleep with the window open. During wintertime, I also like to sleep with the windows open. Although my bedroom is in a very small, it's basically a small shed that was built against our house. And it's not very well isolated. So, but during the wintertime, when it's freezing outside, it's also freezing inside. But it's like the best place for our bed, to put our beds. But a very weird house, was old cheese warehouse, but a very small one. It has very weird levels everywhere. I always keep the windows open, for health reasons. Although in the wintertime, sometimes I close them so we don't freeze to death.
How do you stay up to date?
I don't watch the news as much, although during these times I do, obviously. But normally people tell me stuff. The same with when they put an hour back, 1 hour, or usually my dad calls me that I shouldn't forget to turn back the clock.
What is the song that should play in the background when you're sad, and would you start singing it for us?
I would love to sing something for you. Yeah, it's mostly instrumental music, so I can't really sing that.
Yeah, you could hum it.
Hum it. Well, it's it's not necessarily music you can hum. It's like weird cacophonic music. So I'm sorry to have to disappoint you.
Continuing with the questions, who's your childhood hero or heroine?
Is Spider-Man or Jackie Chan? Can I do both?
Of course.
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
So if Jackie Chan or Spider-Man would invite you to dinner, what story would you tell them to impress them?
Well, I mean, the reason why I adore them is basically because they can do things that's... I mean, how it's impossible to impress Spider-Man or Jackie Chan. I mean, you shouldn't even try. I would just listen to them, especially Jackie Chan. I think he's got a lot of nice stories. Yeah, so I would probably just listen. That would be more fun.
All right. What's your new bad habit during the lockdown?
Yeah, snacking. That's definitely snacking. Yeah. Chocolate. I did drink more wine than I usually do. I don't drink a lot normally. I mean, I wasn't drunk or anything, but I mean, we did drink more than was usual, I can tell you that.
Would you go somewhere else for the next lockdown?
No, actually, I like it here. I got my thing set up. I got my studio. My studio is actually kind of corona-proof, basically. So no, I wouldn't spend my time elsewhere.
What do you miss most from the time before the pandemic?
Well, exercise, although that's completely my own fault. While seeing friends, of course. I mean, you can see friends, but it's a bit more difficult. I mean, I don't have a driver's license, so we have to use public transportation, and that's like only possible from, I believe, since last week. So I can finally see some friends again, which is nice. That's also why I probably refer to video games as much as I do now, because that was a way of keeping in touch with my friends. And that was a nice communal thing to do.
Okay, so these are actually like the last few questions. What would you buy for 5 euros?
What am I? Well, the world, if I could buy it for 5 euros. And other than that, chocolate, lots of chocolate.
All right. So what would you like to tell everybody, but nobody is asking you about it?
I developed this great idea for egg on toast, which is like, I think this is the most brilliant idea ever, but somebody called it the best solution for a problem that doesn't exist. But I'm a adventurist for my way of making a toast egg sandwich, which is basically you put a piece of bread in the toaster for just a short while, then you put toast in the frying pan with some butter and stuff, and you put the egg or you make a little indent in the top of the in the toast. And then while the toast is frying in the frying pan, you put the egg on top. But the cool thing is, now the egg will form itself in the shape of the sandwich. And it will stay on top of the sandwich. So if you keep frying it with the lid on top of the frying pan, you actually have like a perfect fried egg sandwich. And it doesn't fall off your sandwich, which is like a big problem I was having while eating a thing. I guess these are the brilliant things I learned during the pandemic.
More pineapple questions. Where would you like to see pineapple on?
On the barbecue. I do really enjoy pineapple on the barbecue with some powdered sugar in foil. If you wrap it in a tin foil with a powdered sugar on top, that's a great combination.
That sounds delicious.
Oh, it definitely is. Yes. You should definitely try it out.
All right. Well, then maybe you could describe your work a little bit for those who cannot really imagine what you make, and what exactly is die Fernwehoper?
I've been working on a series of virtual reality dioramas for since 2013. And you know, a diorama is basically what you see in a museum, where you have this sometimes miniature version of the scene. And that scene is stuck in one specific moment. So, for example, if you would have a diorama of a battlefield, it would be a fixed moment in time of, a castle being stormed, or you know, some saber-toothed tigers slaying an antelope or something like that. And it's always this one specific moment that you know, if you would visit that same place a week from now, it would still be the exact same moment. And I always love that feeling of, mosquito cum in Amber. And especially that works extremely well for VR, because in VR you have to take your time to become fully immersed in an environment. So if you create this diorama type environment that's stuck in this moment, you know that the person visiting it will feel emotion you're trying to convey, and you can instead of having to wait behind glass, you can actually go into the diorama, and you can become part of that moment. And virtual reality it just works very well, you being able to take the time to become fully immersed, but also because you have the in my dioramas, there's no time, so you don't have a beginning or an end, which is very important because you can, you don't feel rushed. Where in a traditional video game or a movie, story from point A to point B, and I dislike that with a vengeance, especially like mostly for VR. I mean, in other mediums, it's perfectly fine, but VR gives you the opportunity to visit, a world, visit spaces. Those are experiences that work like in real life and that work well in VR. So I try to come up with this genre, if you will, that would only work in VR or work best in VR. Because I think there should be more VR-specific ways of telling a story. Because if you tell a story from point A to B, like traditionally, you can also just as well make a movie or a video game. And then there's no reason at all for you to do VR except it's cool. And that's like the worst argument you can have to make something VR. Because then either you make something that's not, you know, necessarily, you know, the visitor wouldn't feel like, oh, this is only something I can see in VR. And then it's not worth the effort for them. Or you haven't thought about what makes VR special. And then you probably shouldn't do VR at all. So my dioramas were basically interactive illustrations. Still moments in time that you can visit without the pressure of, you know, say, the princess or solve puzzles.
I really like the idea of a contrast to these traditional video games, like being in a rush, and you made something that is so relaxing and calming down. I really like that.
Yeah, it's very important. Like in a video game, for example, if you play a shooter or whatever, you run through an office building, you run past each and every desk you see. Like in VR, one of those desks can tell stories. Like you can go, you know, come up close to a stapler, or you can read a notebook. That's a big difference. Like standing on top of the stairs is exciting in VR. Like in a game, you would just jump off if it can save your time. So your priorities are completely different in VR, or should be completely different in VR. VR can also, convey different emotions that you can't really convey in other mediums. Like, for example, video games, like the popular video games, mostly cater to the primary emotions, which is all fine. And you have some indie games that are more experimental, that try to convey something more complicated or refined. And in VR, you have the opportunity to make the visitor feel completely new things. And that sounds completely abstract, but like with, for example, the opera, the Verme opera, the feeling you have when you accidentally make eye contact with the performer on stage, that's a very specific feeling, very specific emotion. And it's kind of like breaking the fourth wall, because at that moment, you know, the performer on stage, he looks you in the eye, or she looks you in the eye, and you look back, and you share this moment. Like, and the performer on stage is performing, they're playing a character. In that moment, it kind of breaks character, and the distance between you and the performer disappears. And that's a very abstract, subtle feeling or emotion that works like in real life, in theater, or, you know, music performances or whatever. It would not work in a video game. It would not work in a movie. So I'm looking for those type of emotions and feelings, because that's, you know, conveying those emotions is what, you know, will eventually make VR a viable experience for people, because then they will get something they can't get anywhere elsewhere. And you can argue, well, they can go to the theater and they have the same effect. Well, that's true, but you can enlarge it. And that's like quite literally what I've done, because I created this space opera where you are, in this opera hall, and this huge opera singer, 30 meters high, will start to sing for you. And she's the embodiment of a dying star. And she sings about impossible love for you and her, because what you see of her is already passed away, just as the stars you see at night. And most of those stars are just light that hits your eyes, which is a nice metaphor for movies, especially the silent movie ever, where you have these performers that, you know, are already died years ago, which you can still see before you. So I like the idea of trying to get that feeling of making that eye contact, and I try to tell a story based around that feeling, that emotion. So in that, my opera hall, there's this 30 meter high opera singer that looks at you directly and starts to sing for you. Then she slowly starts to fade away. To me, that's what makes VR so special, is that you can convey different and new emotions, which you can do in other mediums. I mean, other mediums are better in other things. One of the worst things you can do is to think VR as being, VR is a television. And on a television, you can play things, you can watch movies, you can do a lot of things. So VR is, kind of the same, where you can do all types of things. So I mostly focus on the storytelling thing. So what would be a good genre to have working on a virtual reality headset? And I'm obviously pitching for my own choir. I'm trying to explore VR through my dioramas, and other people will do it in differently. We need a lot of experimentation to know what sticks, what works well, and what doesn't. But the worst thing you can do is just stick to what you already know. Then you would never find something new.
I think that is such an interesting project, and I would really like to know if you've done it alone, or how many people helped you, and how long did it take?
Oh, well, it's quite a long project. It's one of my longest projects. And it doesn't look like it took a long time to get right, but you have to take into account that making something in VR is extremely difficult, because you have to solve a lot of problems. Like the first version I did was for the Frankfurter Buchmesse, and it was a version I wasn't quite happy with. It was a short time, like 5 months that we had. And then afterwards I spent another 2 years, basically starting from scratch. And first the whole project was in color, and then it turned into something that was black and white, because that caused a certain, a distance that would, I had to find the right way to tell the story, and going black and white made sure that you felt that there was a distance between you and that which you were seeing. So it became, you were aware that what you were seeing was fake. If I would have done it in color, you wouldn't have that obstruction, and it would feel weird, it felt odd. So I kind of, that was a process I kind of, I had to do by myself, because it was difficult to, if you have to work with a team, you kind of have to know what the team should do. But if you don't know, how things work, you can't really, give tasks to other people. And so it's, I started the project with one poet called Maud van Houwaert. It's a Belgian poet, and an opera singer from Switzerland, and a composer, Misha Feldhaus. And those were the main people I worked with for the first version. And afterwards, I got some help from my interns. They helped me with the 3D modeling. We also had a graphic designer who did the libretto, the graphic design. I'm forgetting people. Oh yeah, there was also Armeno Albers, who did the soundscapes. So I was mostly responsible for the design, or the programming, the animation, and the visual things, because I like to be able to do both the technical things as well as the visual things. And then I look for people who can help me with those things. I mean, the bigger your project gets, the less you are able to do yourself. So Madeira Rentals are also for me a way of experimenting freely. The team was quite big, I guess, for experimental work. Although my next work is even bigger with more people involved. Was that a bit of a coherent answer at all?
Yeah, it was perfect. So you told us about your presentation at the Frankfurt Book Fair. In which context do you show your work, and how do the people react if they see it in the different contexts?
Well, the context is very, 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 very important. I tried a lot of different ways of showing my work. I showed it at game festivals, I showed it at movie festivals, I showed it in art exhibitions. And they all have their own approach. Movie festivals seldom have the space or the time to properly show more elaborate work, although the Venice VR does have more space to actually show more elaborate pieces or art installations regarding VR. But most festivals, for example, don't have the time, don't have the money, don't have the space. So you have to tell your or show your installation in a different way. And that's always a difficult thing. If you have a video game or a movie, those are defined or mostly defined ways of showing your work. But in VR, it's also a bit more difficult because you have to take into account a lot of things. Like during the Frankfurt Book Fair, there was not a lot of knowledge about showing or exhibiting VR. So there were no technical people that could help you with setting up things. So if there were bugs or crashes, you were responsible. So especially those early years, it was quite taxing because you had to also be the tech person on site. And you had to, do all the logistics and stuff like that. Like luckily nowadays, most exhibitions, they have their people or their people are familiar with VR. So you can focus on showing the work or the actual installation part of it. So like in 2014, I created a physical installation. It was for my second diorama called Der große Gothic. And that was like something that would work very well in a museum setting. This is a very cool exhibition. It was part of in the Akademie der Künste in Berlin. And it was like with all the new media stuff combined. It was very cool because you saw all the, the older new media arts from the 90s up until all the modern pieces. And you saw an evolution in the work. And we still have to have that evolution in VR. And especially for the opera, like I tried multiple ways of showing it. So, in a simple installation setup with physical chairs, where you would sit in the physical chairs and you could visit the opera hall. It didn't really feel right because the whole experience was actually about, you and your impossible love for that star. And there was this loneliness that you should feel. But that was more, an installation part, it didn't feel right. And then I showed it in festivals, just the first act, with some Pipe and Grapes, that worked okay. And then last year in the iFilm Institute in Amsterdam, I showed the piece in its full three-act setup with three different locations. And each location was a different act. And that works extremely well because all the different acts are scenes that happen in the same time. So in the first act, you will have the actual opera performance where the 30 meter high opera singer sings for you and your possible love for her. And then she dies and gets reborn and sings the song again. That's, perpetual. And in the second scene, you can visit her dressing room, which is empty because she's performing in the other space. And in the third scene, you're visiting a janitor space, where this old janitor replaces a star when the star dies. And actually, the star that dies is the opera singer from the first act. And that, all those spaces happen in the same exact moment. You have to go from one space to another to another. And that's the correct way of showing it. Not linearly, like one act, then act two, then act three. That's spaces. And it's very different, like it makes a small difference, but it makes all the difference. Because in your mind, it feels like everything is happening at the same moment, that these spaces exist somewhere in the virtual ether. And for the Fermi opera, that was the right way of telling this story. And I guess every story or every experience is slightly different, so it should have a slightly different approach. But I do like exhibiting my dioramas as spaces, not as a movie, a linear experience or whatever, but as spaces. And that's something, you know, I found out after a year of exhibiting work in festivals and whatnot. I wish I would have come up with that solution to the problem earlier, but I mean, that's why it's so fun to work on VR, because like everything is still unknown. You can kind of figure it out. I mean, that's art in general is something, you know, you have to figure out things because everything is kind of new. But in VR, it's even more true, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. You told us about your most recent project, and maybe you could tell us a little bit more about it, a little bit more detailed, if you want to.
Yeah. My newest project, it's called The Great Orator, and it's going to be... it's actually kind of a departure from my normal diorama work, because my dioramas are all fixed moments. Whereas this experience has a day and night cycle. So if it's evening, when you put on the goggles and explore the virtual world, it's also evening in that virtual space. So it actually has a real time a day and night cycle, which kind of changes your relation that you have with the work, because then it will feel like there's this virtual world that goes on and on and on and on and on and mimics your own world. So instead of feeling that it is a moment, it feels like it's this alternative, you know, reality that exists next to you. And this story is about what happens to a world when it's, you know, it stops believing in reason and logic. And when you know, it's about this defeat creature that literally becomes all there is, until even the followers become one with the message the great orator is orating about. And his world is all empty, so it's an infinite parking lot with this huge structure in the middle that keeps on broadcasting this oration. This oration will be generated with AI. And we're in close collaboration with the University of Leiden, and they're doing all the AI stuff, so text to speech and the generation of text. So we're going to feed current affairs into this world. And then, like each visit you have in that world, you will hear the orator orate about new things. So, for example, during the pandemic, she would give orations about the pandemic. And each space within that world, we'll use that generation of text in different ways. And it kind of shows you how easy it is to manipulate information, and how, you know, information can change considering its context, which is extremely exciting to explore. Because we're kind of mixing a lot of different new things. You're also able to interact with the environment, which is something I normally would not allow with my dioramas. Because a lot of the YouTube just, you know, you just find the wall and look around in there, right? environment. While with this environment, I actually like the idea of you being able to manipulate or interact with the objects within that world. Your interaction with the objects is also going to be used in the oration. So for example, if you would pick up an object, the great orator will know this, and she will start giving an oration about what you're holding. So for example, if you would hold a coffee mug, she would start to give an oration about a coffee mug. So it's also a reflection on, how social media platforms are all listening in to what you're doing. It's very early on, so it's got a long way to go, but there's a lot of interesting new things to explore. Does that make any sense?
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah, that sounds really interesting. And I'm looking forward to see it at some point.
Yeah, me too.
So the title for our series of interviews is Art in Times of a Crisis. And regarding that, I wanted to ask you if the COVID pandemic somehow influenced your work, and what changed in this time, or did anything change, and what are the differences to normal times?
The times you were living in kind of is the context you reflect upon different artworks. So I guess if I'm now, we're living in the pandemic times, I look a bit differently at my, like, for example, the opera is a good example. Like, it was always about, the distance between you and between real and virtual, between you and the performer. And now it's like, it's even more applicable, because like the distance between you and this, love you have is impossible to reach, because like what you see is already gone and you have to keep the distance. The only thing you have is the distance. I mean, the last couple of months, that was exactly what most people had. I mean, there was this distance between everything. So it's nice to have, your change and the meaning change. Like when it was work, it's all the more applicable now than it was when I started it, because like the whole idea for the greater radio, for example, it was I started in 2015, I believe. Then I decided to work on the opera, and then Trump came, and then I had to it wasn't as fun as a project anymore, because it was too true, and I didn't want to have another white privileged male shouting. Nobody wants to listen to that. It became reality. That's no fun. The world started to change in a way that the piece should also change, or else it would be just a bad copy of reality, which is not fun. One fun thing I actually like about Great Way is like the structure in the middle of that infinite parking lot, where I'm able to explore. It's like a broadcasting antenna. And I don't know if this is also a thing in Germany, but in Holland, people were setting those on fire because they thought like it was causing the pandemic. And there was this craziness because like even normal people started to spout conspiracy theories. I all of a sudden I was like, the broadcasting antenna on top of that structure makes complete sense now in this context. It's just kind of nice, I guess. So I didn't really change anything except, the meaning of works changed regardless of need, I guess. More of the time, and then I mean, you should somehow give an answer to stuff that's happening around you without coming to this world. So it didn't really change anything except that I'm more aware of what I'm telling or how I should tell it.
I think that's a really nice closing sentence, and if you have nothing more to add, our questions would be done here.
So wait, what's your stance on pineapple and pizza?
Oh, maybe that's the thing we could argue about.
Oh no!
No, I don't really like it, but I don't think it's that horrible, and it's kind of a guilty pleasure, like the toast Hawaii. I think it's the same, so one slice is okay. A whole pizza full of pineapple, I wouldn't like that. But I can accept it if somebody next to me is eating it.
Okay. Well, toast Hawaii is less bad than a pizza Hawaii. I don't know. I mean, I would never argue with somebody about having pineapple on pizza. A friend of mine, he loves it. I don't know. There's so many things you could put on a pizza. And it shouldn't be pineapple. It's also like people who eat kiwis with the skin still on. It's like,
Can people honestly do this?
Oh, yes. I saw somebody do this in public, and I was so offended. I was like, how dare he eat a kiwi with skin in public? He wants us to watch him eat it. It's disgusting. I came home, and I was angry and confused, and I didn't know what to do with my feelings. And I started to think, and I saw some kiwis, and I thought, well, I'm going to try it, because you never know. Perhaps he's got a point. And then I actually tried eating a kiwi with his skin. Actually, it was kind of okay. And then I was like, oh, okay, problem solved. So, you know, when things confuse you, you should just try it. But now you should try to eat a kiwi with skin. It's actually not that bad.
I had a kind of similar moment when, do you know these sunflower seeds? And
yeah.
When people eat these seeds with the, I don't know, it's not a skin with a hull on it.
Oh,
so,
seriously?
Yeah, it's horrible. And I tried it, and it's still horrible.
My God. Do you even digest the hulls?
I don't know. I didn't eat enough to find that out, but... I really have no idea.
Now we should try it out. Maybe that's a good subject for your next broadcast. Try out what happens.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, perfect. Then,
awesome.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you so much. I really, really like the interview.
Yeah, me too. I like to have more questions like these. It's fun. Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Perfect. Thank
you
very
much. Have a nice day.
Tschüss.
Ciao.
Bye. So, das war's auch schon mit dem Interview mit Daniel Ernst. Vielen Dank für das schöne Gespräch.
Und jetzt hören wir noch in die Fernweh-Oper rein.
Als ob einen Keil trieb in unser geteiltes Leben. Der Kosmos hat messen kann mit ihm.
Shift FM zwischen 0 und 1. Gespräche über Kunst und Digitalität.
Erster 4. 2020. Liebes Tagebuch. Heute sollte Semesterstart sein.
Ausnahmezustand an den Unis.
Aber wie es natürlich vorauszusehen war, wurde der Start auf den 14.04. verschoben. Ehrlich gesagt glaube ich nicht daran. Auf der einen Seite freue ich mich über so viel Freizeit, auf der anderen...
Mehr als 2 Personen, Restaurants, Bar, Theater, Kinos und Museen, Fitnessstudios, Schwimmbäder, Training, Freizeit, Gottesdienste sind untersagt.
Es ist einfach nur belastend. Leider bestimmt Corona den Alltag und ich habe sonst nichts Aufregendes zu berichten. Ach ja doch, heute habe ich eine Packung Klopapier ergattern können.
In der Tat.
Bis dann.